my place in tech changes every day. But I don't fear the future, because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts, so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself.
You're listening to STEMcast, brought to you by McGill iGEM.
On this episode of STEMcast, we have Dr. Shuichi Guo. Dr. Guo is a current assistant professor at McGill in anatomy and cell biology, and his research in bacterial adhesion proteins has helped discover new methods of combating antimicrobial resistance. Some of our listeners might be excited to hear about Dr. Guo's history in iGEM, but we'll get back to that in the episode. Take it away.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the STEMcast podcast. My name's Ahur, and today we're lucky to have Dr. Guo joining us on the show today. To start off, Dr. Guo, would you like to share a bit about yourself, your background, and what inspired you to pursue a career in the field that you're studying right now?
Thank you. It's nice to be here. So basically, my career started with a graduate school at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, where I obtained a degree in biochemistry. There, I was studying a fascinating protein, type of protein called antifreeze proteins. And it turned out this antifreeze protein wasn't a protein that helps bacteria prevent freezing, but instead it's a very large molecule that turned out to be an adhesion molecule that we're going to touch on later. But after that, I've done a postdoc at Eindhoven University of Technology in the Netherlands. And before coming to McGill, I was a research scientist at Yale University, learning about the cutting-edge imaging technique called cryo-electron tomography. Yeah, so basically, I started graduate school without knowing where I'm heading afterwards. But, you know, it just turned out that the research project I was working on was so fascinating. I was so drawn to it. Then I decided to pursue a career in research, specifically in microbiology to improve human health, as well as fighting climate change.
Okay, so you talked about how you had different areas that you went to pursue your studies. So you went to Queens, as well as Yale and the Netherlands. What were some of the different pivotal moments or influential mentors in your academic journey that influenced you to be where you are right now?
Yeah, so there are lots of different moments that were pivotal, and I've met with many different mentors, and a lot of them have very different styles. One of the things is when I was doing graduate school at Queen's University, my mentor, Dr. Peter Davies, was such a kind mentor, and he was not only teaching me how to do good science, but basically also coaching us how to be a good person. That was that kind of helped me pursue my research during graduate school. But later on, I've done research at different countries with different culture. And the more I do it, the more fascinated I was, drawn to microbiology as well as structural biology. Yeah, so there are many mentors. As I said, Dr. Peter Davies was one of them. And also, I have to be very grateful to my mentor at Yale University, Dr. Jin Liu, who provided me with lots of opportunities, not only to do cutting-edge research, but also for setting up my career for independent research.
Okay, so I wanted to dive more into your research now that you've been mentioning. So for listeners who might not be familiar, could you explain where you focus your research right now? I first met you at your presentation for anatomy and cell biology students at the beginning of the year, and you talked a bit about your research in bacterial adhesions, which you've mentioned, and infections. Could you elaborate on that, and where is your research heading now?
So basically my research focuses on studying bacterial adhesion. Basically the other way to word it is how do bacteria stick. So basically I study these very large protein molecules present on the bacterial cell surface. These molecules, they vary in terms of specificity. So they're almost like a different hands on, grown on a human body. But now we're talking about these very long molecules on the bacterial surface that are sticky to different substrates. For example, some of these adhesins will be targeting proteins on other cells, host cells, And some of them will be targeting some sugar molecules. Why is this important? Because for any infection to happen, the microorganisms here, bacteria, they first have to come in contact with the human tissue or cells. And then they can start to infect, basically secreting toxins and causing diseases. So our research really focuses on the first step of the infection processes. How do bacteria bind to the human cells? And we study the specific structures of how these adhesions look like. With this information at the molecular level, we can devise specific molecules that can inhibit bacteria from binding to different surfaces. Therefore, we can hopefully prevent infections that way. The reason why this might be important is we are in an era of significant antibiotic resistance. So what that means is we are running out of drug molecules that can treat bacteria infections, because the bacteria, they evolve so fast that they're able to be resistant to these drug molecules. So why do bacterial anti-adhesion strategy can be a good one compared to all the other drug molecules is we are not actually actively killing the bacteria by giving them these anti-adhesion molecules. We are simply letting the bacteria not able to bind to their specific targets. Therefore, the bacteria are not really gaining resistance at the same rate as they would if they're being killed by certain molecules. I hope that gives you some idea about what we do in the lab.
No, yeah, that was a really clear explanation. You mentioned the infections and you didn't go into any specifics about any specific types of infections. Are there any specific infections that you guys are looking at right now? Or is it just more about the actual mechanism you're focusing on?
Basically, we're looking at different pathogens that causes different infectious diseases. For example, one of the bacterial pathogens we work with in the lab is called Vibrio cholera. Vibrio cholera is the agent for cholera, which has caused several pandemics and is still very prevalent in some parts of the world. So when we accidentally ingest Vibrio cholera, these bacteria, they'll basically travel to the small intestine. And before they can infect and cause cholera, they have to first bind to the intestinal cells. So we're studying one very giant protein that's present on the Vibrio cholera cell surface. And what we found very interesting is this protein not only can bind Vibrio cholera to non-human surfaces. For example, Vibrio cholera, usually they live in the sea marine environment. So they interact with all kinds of microorganisms in the sea using this particular molecule. But when they travel into the human body, this molecule turns into a very sticky agent that can bind to human cells, multiple different types of human cells. And what we are doing is we are trying to study different segments of this giant molecule present in the Vibrio cholera cell surface. And we're able to solve the structure of these molecules. And then now we're coming up with molecules that can inhibit these specific interactions. So some of the experiments we've done in collaboration with Dr. Carl Close in the University of Texas in San Antonio was we were able to use these molecules designed to specifically inhibit this adhesion from Vibrio cholera. And then we look at the effect of it in animal models. For example, specifically, we're looking at mouse models. And what we found is this molecule can indeed slow down the colonization of Vibrio cholera to the mouse intestine. So we're hoping to basically further develop this molecule to make sure it's not only effective at blocking the adhesion by this bacterium, but also it cannot be easily metabolized by human body. For example, a lot of these proteins or drug molecules, when we ingest them into our body had mechanisms to break them down very quickly. So in this case, we want the molecules to stay in our body for a while before they get degraded. So we're working on this route. And the other bacterium that maybe some of you have heard of is called Pseudomonas aeruginosa. This is a bacterium that very commonly found in all kinds of infections, including infections that causes cystic fibrosis. We're looking at a particular adhesion molecule called the type 4 pilus structure. Yeah, so we are using all kinds of cutting-edge imaging techniques to study the structure of this molecule. Yeah, so I think these are the two examples of pathogens we study in the lab. We are making a lot of progress, but we are also interested in the bacterial adhesion, not only to human cells in terms of human impact, but we are looking at how they're interacting with the environmental microbes, because that has an environmental impact in terms of climate change.
Okay, that makes sense. So that was also really interesting, the two different examples you gave. So thank you. I want to dive more into the synthetic biology aspect of your research. As you may or may not know, iGEM focuses on advancements in synthetic biology. And I noticed in one of your publications, you researched and studied the use of synthetic biology to create the new material patch, a useful tool which is used in biotechnology and medicine to allow living cells to do their job without escaping or any restriction. How do you believe synthetic biology can be used to continue aiding in your research and innovation within microbiology and within any other research, like in that kind of field?
Yeah, okay. So you mentioned iGEM, that's very interesting, because I do know iGEM, and I think I know iGEM very well because I participated in iGEM in 2018 when I was doing a postdoc in the Netherlands. The project you mentioned, the patch living material. So at the time, the iGEM team, we came up with an idea using the adhesins that I was studying. So I've told you about, adhesins being agent that help bacteria colonize, like human bodies in a way that we need to control adhesion. For example, we need to disrupt the adhesion to improve human health. But at the time, we tried to think about this in another way. So we tried to think, is there a way that we can make use of these adhesins instead of disrupting it? Maybe there are some beneficial bacterial adhesion rather than those that cause diseases. So the iGEM team there, we came up with the idea, what if we trap some bacteria that are functional in certain materials and have the bacterium being functional to help improve human health? So the specific idea we came up with was to trap E. coli, engineered E. coli bacteria, inside of a material called a hydrogel. So these hydrogels, they're very porous, meaning molecules can easily diffuse in and out of the hydrogel. So what we're doing is, we're hoping to do is to use this hydrogel work as a band-aid, basically the band-aid loaded with drug molecules to treat certain infections. But the dangers of using a organism, a genetically modified organism such as E. coli within such a system is they can very easily diffuse out of these hydrogels and then they escape, become a GMO in the environment. So our idea was to use adhesins, engineered adhesins, to anchor these E. coli cells within these hydrogel matrix while the E. coli can produce and secrete another molecule called the lysostaphin that can basically kill a pathogen called the Staphylococcus aureus. We were able to demonstrate that with the engineered adhesin, these E. coli, they stay inside of hydrogel for a prolonged period of time without escaping very much. And at the same time, they were able to secrete this molecule called lysostaphin that can kill methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, which are known as MRSA. That was a great experience for me because as a microbiologist or a structural biologist, we usually don't do experiments using an approach that's engineering-centric. So this iGEM project really gave us a chance to approach our research using a more engineering-centric view of biology. So that was a very helpful mindset to adopt when, for example, devise ways to modify and manipulate biosynthetic pathways we study. So I guess that was my experience in synthetic biology. Synthetic biology has been really propelled in recent years by much better tools. A lot of them are basically AI-based. So I think there are just so many things you can do with synthetic biology in terms of improving our health and, the environmental impact is also there. I think that was a really enjoyable, experience for me in terms of using synthetic biology to devise something useful. And in the end, the nicest thing was we were able to publish a paper together with all the iGEM members at the University of Technology at Eindhoven. So it was a wonderful experience.
That's great. That is actually so cool that you were also part of iGEM and competing at that postdoc level. And you also mentioned some of the exciting developments that could come from synthetic biology and the engineering mindset within your field, which is amazing. And it's great to see the interdisciplinary aspects of these two different fields. So I wanted to ask you more about your research and for you to provide some insights to some listeners about your journey. What were the biggest challenges that you faced within your research?
Yeah, so that's a great question. Doing research, there are always many challenges. I found now I'm setting up my own independent laboratory. One of the things that's been very challenging is as scientists, we go through graduate school and postdoctoral trainings, but we are very well trained in terms of how we do science. But we are not very well trained in terms of how to manage a research team and how to, basically, there are many skills involved in doing that. So I've been learning that in a way that, everyone at McGill in my department, they are super helpful and, trying to coach me with, how to run the lab and stuff. So that's been challenging. But, the good thing about McGill is there's so many talented students who love to contribute in research. So I was actually very lucky to quickly assemble the team, mostly with undergraduate students, but slowly we're getting graduate students to do research. So I guess at this stage of my career, very early on, these are some of the most challenging things of basically how to set up a lab and how to recruit talented students. But at the same time, I think, the other thing about, the challenges in doing research or even pursuing a career in research is how do you do the time management well? Because we have to juggle with so many different things in a day, with teaching, running a research lab, writing research grants, and also writing papers. Not to mention, a lot of time should be devoted into doing experiments. So I hope I give you, firsthand experiences on these challenges. But I don't want to discourage people from doing research because it's really a rewarding career. And, it's just so much fun to discover new things in the lab.
Okay, to branch off of that, to inspire students to join research or for any aspiring scientists and students, are there any skills or experiences you believe are essential for success in the field? And how can students get involved in research projects within the field when they're still in their undergrad?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So I think, again, being at McGill, it's great that there are many, many opportunities for undergraduate students to interact with either junior or senior independent researchers. For example, I was fortunate to have a chance to present at the Supen Science, organized by the Faculty of Science, early September last year. And in that event, there are many undergraduate students who show up, who show enthusiasm in research. And many of them even reached out to me to say, hey, Dr. Guo, can we do research in your lab? So I was very happy to accept students, in the lab. And I was also excited to see students who get into research early on. A lot of these students are first-year university students, but they learn very quickly in the lab. I would say one thing is, if you think you like to do research, please reach out to the researchers around you. And typically, there are a lot of opportunities for students to do research in the lab, especially at McGill. So I think the qualities of being a successful researcher, I think one quality is you have to be persistent, because a lot of research does not come in fruition in a day or two. It requires some persistence over a long period of time. Really, there's always a lot of failures, so don't get discouraged in getting negative results, because that could lead you to a very interesting discovery. So I think being persistent, being very careful, and at the same time, just, you know, don't be discouraged by negative results, but look at the long-term benefit of making discoveries and the excitement you can get from it. So I think these are some of the key qualities that helped me come this far. I certainly think, you know, like students, you know, as long as you love doing research and you keep at it, you'll be successful.
Okay, so now looking more into the future, what are some of the unanswered questions or challenges in microbiology and synthetic biology that you find particularly intriguing or that you believe future scientists, like the students we were talking about, should consider if they're entering this field?
Yes, for me, my training is mostly concentrated in structural biology. So we care about how molecules look and why the certain structures of molecules give molecules a certain function. In particular, my field, I'm looking at these adhesion molecules. I think this field is still in its early days. So what I mean is a lot of these molecules, even though we know they're out there, but we have no idea how these molecules look like and what kind of molecules on the human cells or like tissues they bind to. Once you know what they bind to, we need to find out the exact chemistry. What are the atoms involved in these interactions? So these are the fascinating questions I'm pursuing. And we, fortunately, in recent years, we are really coming up with a lot of great technologies that can help us get there faster than before. One of the breakthroughs in our field is nowadays, using machine learning-based tools, we can predict protein structures at a very high accuracy. So this was not achieved, let's say, even just 2 years ago. It wasn't that great. But now with all these tools, we're able to look at certain proteins even before we perform experiments. Obviously, these are still not at 100% or that kind of high accuracy, but that gives us a chance to hypothesize about you know, what kind of experiments we should do. And another breakthrough in technology is called cryo-electron microscopy. 15 years ago or 10 years ago, when we are looking at protein structures, we always have to purify these proteins from either their native source or we have to recombinantly produce these proteins. And we have to trick them into growing crystals, basically crystallization of proteins. And then we can solve their structures by X-ray crystallography. So that's a very a difficult process. A lot of these proteins will never crystallize. So now with the you know, advancement in this field of cryo-electron microscopy, we can look at almost any protein. As long as they're sort of over a certain size limit, we should be able to solve their structure. And that really gives us a chance to look at how molecules and proteins interact in their native conditions. Because when we think about these proteins, they're never alone in nature, be it a bacterial protein or a human protein. They are always interacting with some other proteins and they're very dynamic. So how we capture that before, it was very difficult. We only have to look at the very small part of these proteins. We have to isolate certain part of these proteins and look at it. But now with the overall technological advancement, we can look at these interactions more comprehensively. So for me, to study bacterial adhesion or microbial adhesion, this is really a great time. And there's lots to be learned and to be investigated in the future.
Okay, so with hearing all of that future potential in the field and the inspiring tone of our discussion now, I think that's a good place to end things off. So thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Guo, and I hope you have a great rest of your day. And to all of our listeners, thanks for listening, and we'll see you in our next episode.